This is for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
And I'm Paul James.
And this is For The Players, the pop culture's PlayStation podcast. That for 40 years of playing PlayStation and 6 plus years in that games media combined, we thought we'd throw our hat into the ring and join that PlayStation conversation. Now, I doubt that you know Josh's spiel.
No, I have no clue. If you enjoy that conversation, you can enjoy many more at blah, 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 blah.
I'll give it a go and then see how it goes. You can join the conversation every Monday at 9 a.m. on YouTube and 8 a.m. on all podcast services. But if you want to join in the conversation, head to the facebook.com/group/popculturist, our little community group. We all hang out there. All the other socials are linked in the description. But if you like what we do and you want to help us out a little bit, it's patreon.com/thepopculturist. There might be a tier there that interests you. And if you want to show your love for Pop Culturist by having it on your body, head to popculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shirts, mugs, bags, pillowcases, anything you need with our logo smacked on there. But you're wearing a different shirt.
Yeah, sorry, I'm wearing a Player 2 one. Yeah, I'm not a Pop Culturist.
So for those that don't know, this is Paul. He's from player2.net.au. This is your
third visit.
Damn.
I think I need to go.
I think you might be our most
recurring
guest, because I think the other one is Dave. I think Dave's done two.
Well, I was here for, we did an episode back in May or June last year.
Yeah.
And then because we played Crash that night and stream.
That's true.
Remember, I killed you all in the stream there with Native Forest.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, Paul, you've never played this before. You'll be no good.
You're gonna have such a half time.
Killed it.
One go.
And then I came back to talk PSX with you guys at the end of last year.
Yeah.
So and here I am, like a bad smell. I'm back again.
So you're almost like, it was a 6 month gap.
Now it's four to five. Yeah.
Now it's like 3 months, and next week will be a month.
I'll be weekly soon.
Then it's, yeah, just be here. Just how you been, man?
Just a photo of me in the background here. Put it over the top of the PS2. Would be great.
It'll replace the circle with just your face. Josh is off at the moment. He's celebrating his son's birthday this weekend. So, happy birthday, Alex. Hope you're having a damn good time.
Happy birthday,
mate. But, yeah. How you been, man?
I'm going well. Keeping busy. Yeah. Lots to play. Lots to do. Lots to write about. Lots to record about. There's heaps of stuff going up on the Player 2 site and YouTube channel that's starring this ugly mug.
Yeah, you guys have gone ham on that YouTube channel lately.
Yeah, so I guess the same sort of position you guys are in when YouTube did what it did and forced, you know, 1,000 subscribers and all that. We got really active, and whilst we're far, far, far away from it, I think we're only about a third of the way there yet. I think it's been a good thing. Like, I was never... You and I have spoken about this off camera. When we did that Crash Bandicoot stream, going into it, I was super cynical about... I was never big on Let's Plays and all that sort of stuff. And in terms of consuming them, I'm still not a massive fan. Like, I get involved in some of your stuff every now and then because there's the relationship there that we have. But a very intimate one. But for the most part, it's still not really my thing. But yeah. Since that day, I've really enjoyed making them. So when we decided, all right, it's time to really lean into this thing, I picked up myself a capture card late last year and then finally got using it when I got back from my honeymoon in January and just went for it. And I've been enjoying the whole thing. Like, I've had some series, like I did a Secret of Mana one in the very first week and people requested that became a series. So now I'm 10 parts of the way into an entire series about Secret of Mana. The original one, the Super Nintendo one, not the dodgy remake. Anything and everything that kind of springs to mind. So it's going really well on top of the normal shows that I do with Patched and the Video Games Club and The Insider. And it's been really good. I'm enjoying it.
Well, yeah, it's funny because like the conversation we had about the streams, because before we started doing them here, I was the same boat. I was very cynical towards streaming. I was like, dumb. Like, why just play the game? Why don't you watch some other jerk play it?
Yeah.
But now I'm that jerk and you watch me play the game.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, thanks, man. But as we start every show, we've been playing.
So Ni No Kuni was the big one.
Yeah.
Ni No Kuni 2 specifically. So I played and reviewed that for the site, so please make sure to go and check that out. But
tell us about it. I've never played Ni No Kuni.
So the first one was very much your traditional JRPG, could be up to 100 hours long. Had very Pokemon-esque elements in it.
Okay.
So you could kind of collect what we call familiars. Those familiars join your party and you used them in a battle, a la Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
The sequel, did you mess around with it all at PAX or any of those things?
I played it for about 4 minutes. because I think I kind of jumped in. I think someone may have the demo. It wasn't from the start of the demo.
Well, there was about four different demos.
I was in this giant field, and then I had to walk, and there was the Higgledies or whatever.
Yeah, the Higgledies are cool.
I have no idea what's going on, and I bounce.
So the Higgledies are basically the replacement for familiars in this thing. It's more of an action RPG now.
Okay.
So you're in your battlefield, whatever that is, and you know, you could be encountering enemies in the overworld where it's like an old school RPG where you're kind of walking around the overworld, enemy sees you, runs at you, you get in a battle.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're in an actual region, like a specific kind of fully rendered location, you just see the enemies out there, you get close enough proximity, there we go, the battle's on. But within that space, that battle space, your Higgledies are kind of set up wherever you're hacking and slashing like you might in, you know, say Final Fantasy 15 maybe, for example, where it's that more action RPG sort of thing, or Kingdom Hearts. And then those Higgledies kind of light up every little while, and they can kind of contribute to the battle, and they might have promote healing buffs, or they'll drop this badass sort of attack on the enemies, and they kind of just drop in and out of combat as they're ready and they see fit. There's lots of customizability to the weapons you can use, and how you can power them up and gear them and all that. It's really, really good. And then they've added some new components. They've kind of got a top down, I wouldn't go as far as say like, I suppose RTS sort of thing, yeah, with the skirmishes, and Fallout 4 Metal Gear 5 style kind of build up your kingdom maybe not quite to the same level of death, but like you build up your kingdom, there's different buildings that can be made, the population of those kingdom builds. They give you they produce money.
There's a lot going on here.
There's a lot of systems going on at the same time, and they all work in together really well.
Nice.
Which was the surprising thing for me. You show me this, you show me this, you show me this. I thought, this could get too much. But the skirmishes aren't, for the most part, they're voluntary, so you can do whatever you want, whenever you want. The kingdom thing just kind of ticks along in the background. Maybe every hour or so you go back and you just cash in and then commit that money to whatever resource you want to go from there, and then it continues to go about its business again while you're away. So you still spend the majority of your time playing the core experience, whatever that kind of means. But
so I don't know a lot about
the animes. Visual flair.
That's been my next question. I don't know a lot about the animes, but that's more of a Josh area. But it's got Studio Ghibli.
No, they worked on the first one.
The first one, and they were on
they worked
one.
With Level 5 on the first game, and then you can still see the spirit of Ghibli in there with Ni No Kuni 2, but they're hands off. But the game looks incredible. If you've seen any of that Ghibli work in the past, that really shone through in the first game. I know just enough about their work in the past to go, okay, that, like when I played Ni No Kuni, like, okay, I can see where they're involved. The artistry is incredible. It's not that same 2D thing anymore, like it's 3D in terms of what they're doing with those cutscenes, but it still looks really well done. A bit light on for voice acting, which was a bit disappointing.
Okay, was the first one really heavy?
More so than the second one. Okay. It almost seems like they've tried to rush to hit day and date for the West as well as Japan. And you see the grunts and those, or just one word, but then it's a whole spiel of text. I guess you kind of get that in Monster Hunter as well.
Like,
if you've played Monster
Hunter,
it's the same sort of deal.
Yeah,
I love Monster Hunter, but hey.
And Monster Hunter, that threw me like real hard.
Yeah, it does break the immersion a little bit, but really powerful story. It's not, if anyone's played the first, if you haven't, I'm about to spoil a tiny bit. Your mum dies at the beginning of the first game.
Oh,
it's a really awful scene. Like, she jumps into the river to save Oliver, the main character, and then just after doing so, she has a heart attack on the thing and dies.
That's not where I thought it was going to go.
Whereas in this, and this is a totally standalone character and story, it's hundreds of years after the original, but you lose your kingdom. So I think there's a theme that's clearly occurring over these. It's loss. How do you recover from that? And that's kind of where they kind of kick it off with that, and then you go from there. I won't say too much more about it in terms of spoilers, but I've also been playing Far Cry 5. You've been playing that with me.
You'll see that Friday.
You'll see that Friday. I got sent a code courtesy of Ubisoft. Thank you. We've been doing some stuff with it, Player 2. You got to mess around with it before, enjoyed it. You guys will enjoy it when it comes out on Friday.
Yeah, can't say any more than that, because I know you're
embargoes and all that sort of stuff.
Until like later this evening, and I'm not going to damage what you guys have done. So
I mean, if you know what Far Cry's like, you're getting a very Far Cry sort of experience. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Anything else? I've been jumping into.
Not really. I did mess around with Moss for a little bit, and then the Ni No Kuni review kind of landed on my doorstep, so I had to drop everything there, and I was loving Moss until that moment.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's real good. It's charming. It's beautiful.
I'll go as far as say the definitive VR experience at this point.
Oh shit! Yeah. What I loved about it,
and though, it's weird because it's not what you'd expect from VR.
I think that's what makes it better, because there was a game, I think it was called Wayward Skies, that came out around about the launch of the PSVR, which is very similar in concept, as in you're this god overseeing, and but how that was thrown into the story of Moss was really quite clever. Yeah. And though
Quill,
charming little character, very cool.
Yeah, they're doing, the animation looks beautiful, far better than what I would have expected from a VR game. Where not to kind of, you know, shoot down VR.
There is an expectation. I mean, Far Cry,
kind of
not Far Cry,
with
VR.
There's so much that's going on.
Yeah.
That you can only commit so much to the visual fidelity of it, but it looks fantastic.
Glad you brought up VR, because I played a lot of VR this week, apparently.
Cool.
Out of nowhere, I've been playing tons of VR.
American Dream? No.
And I've played two different VR games this week. So like I went from not taking my VR out of the box for actual months, and then I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Moss, Bravo Team. There was another one in there as well. Impatient.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then this week I played American Dream, which is a game that I first saw at PAX last year or the year before.
It was just this most recent one.
All right, cool.
It might have been the year before, yeah, but I know it was.
I saw it one of the years, and my buddy Tom from Load Screen. He walked over and was like, "You gotta try American Dream. It's stupid." It's
I heard
good.
The same thing at PAX. I didn't get around to it, but I was sold and I picked it up.
So the whole idea is, American Dream is this weird sort of not alternate future. It's this kind of everything about the world revolves around guns.
It's a massive piss take.
Oh, it's a grand, like, it's made out of a studio in Melbourne, man. Like, yeah, and it's,
you know what they're responsible for? They did
Screen Cheat. Samurai Punk or whatever. They did
Screen Cheat. You know, the four-player one where you can't see.
Yeah.
Very cool. They've got a lot of style about them. I like these.
Yeah, there's a lot of charm in this. And in the same way of, like, you know, you start the... There's this big intro scene as you're heading on in, and it's telling you the you know, like, society wasn't built with the power of man. It was built with the power of guns. You know, and it's this little dog that talks to you. And, like... It's like, let's start the story at the beginning, and you're a baby in a bed, and your mum walks in, and you're like, get your mother's attention. You shoot at the door, you know. It's just like, and your mum's here, and she's like, oh, it's time for lunch, and she's feeding you off a gun, and it's just dumb, and it's beautiful. And then, like, a little bit later, you know, you're out in the backyard, like, one of the greatest American pastimes is, you know, throwing the pigskin with your father, and he's like, you catch, son, throws you to shoot it back, you know.
Yeah, cool. I've got it on the PlayStation, but I need to actually play it, and it's convinced me more. So
it's so dumb.
Good.
And later on, there's like, hey, that's Sally across the road. You sure do like Sally, don't you? Get her attention. Shoot her cat. I love those exact words.
Good.
But it's like, it's dumb, and it's so good. It plays really well. I'm enjoying it.
What are you using to control? Is it the DualShock or is it move controls?
Always use move controllers.
Oh, I just wasn't sure what compatibility there was.
One thing that I did find fascinating, which is, and then once again, Tom, who also picked it up as well, the tracking's off.
Oh, really?
Real bad. Like, I've always known, like, one thing that happens a lot with PSVR in particular is, like, slowly but surely...
You lose your center.
Slowly but surely, everything shifts over.
I played Doom VR backwards at one point. Yeah, like I was facing the opposite direction.
It went all so weird. I was playing the VR gun,
yep,
the aim controller, and I hit my wife in the face by accident. It's a great story. Because James was there, and he was yanking
Would
on
Would you
the,
fit right in with a new Quantum... Dream game?
Sick bird.
We're not gonna go there. It's a horrible topic.
No, James was pulling on the headset cord because my son was just crawling around and being annoying.
As they do.
As I'm trying to play video games here, James. God.
Parent later, okay?
Yeah. So Millie comes to get him, and because the tracking was so off, I've gone, what the fuck? And I've sharply turned and just wowed us around the side of the face. I'm like, and I was streaming.
Doghouse for the
night.
And
I was streaming it at the time too. Oh,
I'm gonna have to go back and watch this.
You don't see me. I did it straight from the PlayStation, so there's only voiceover.
Oh, yeah, okay. But you hear it.
You hear the. Oh my god, Millie. Yeah. But this was different. So what I found was the game would kind of pivot, but no, sorry, the game would pivot. But the move controls would still register as forward.
Oh, okay.
So slowly but surely, you're doing that, but the controls want you to stay there, and it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, okay, that's a bit of a shame.
It's really jarring.
But it's, yeah, I mean, how much of that's the fault of the developers versus the the device, I guess the technology.
This is built for the Vive, I think, which is a much stronger and more capable VR.
And it doesn't use kind of like the light sensing tech. Like that is a twitchy sort of weird thing to be using in order to get VR going. It works, but it's less reliable, I guess.
Yeah. That's the thing, yeah, because having known, because Tom got a pre-release copy, so as he said to me, he's like, dude, tracking's fucked. I played it in a pretty lit room. I was like, just a heads up, I don't know how it's going to work. So I'm like, oh, okay, so I played it at like 11 at night, pitch black.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, and it still had the exact same problem. But, you know, I was sitting reasonable distance away, maybe it could be a proximity thing, who knows? Yeah. I'll give another bill.
There's a lot of variables with VR. Yeah.
But like it's the perfect use of VR in terms of like as MOS is really good use for this is like the real advantage of VR is the guns and shooting, and like this just encapsulates that perfectly.
Yeah. I'm real keen. Despite those tech hiccups, I've been real keen for
hopefully it's patched out by the time you get to it. Like I've not jumped, that was about maybe in Saturday of last week. So like stuff we recorded. So in the last week they may have patched it, not too sure.
Fingers crossed.
And what I played for about 10 minutes today was Ark Park.
Is that based on Ark Survival?
So Ark Survival Evolved, they've released this almost like a theme park VR game called Ark Park. I think Jurassic Park, but
okay.
Ark. It's weird because like it's hard to explain. Only because I made my inner child so happy.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
okay.
So
you just hear little tunes going off.
I jumped in the tutorial because like, cool, my son's asleep. My wife's taking a nap. You know, we had a pretty shitty sleep with James last night. So she's like, I'm gonna put VR on. I'll keep one headphone off and just
listen in.
Just see how I go. To. Yeah. Do part time dad stuff.
the whole parenting thing again.
So yeah, you start off in the tutorial and it's like, all right, you know, cool, walk on over. So you jump on those little rail cars. It's like. And next thing you're like heading into this mountain and it's this big freaking green vista and there's rolling hills and water and then like dolphins and this big fuck off thing.
Something dies over the top of you.
And you're like, this is nuts. And you're like, yeah, the party is like, oh my God. Like.
How much to go for?
I have no idea. I got a code.
You got a code. Okay, yeah. Check it later.
Oh, sure. I'll give you the link to the code, please. Yeah, so like I got into like the main foyer of it and it's like, hey, here's holographic representations of the dinosaurs that you'll see. I'm like, oh, all right, cool, that T-Rex is pretty fucking horrifying. And there's like a button in front of us, like, you know, press it and it'll do things. I'm like, okay, cool, raw.
No, I'm not doing this again, I'm out. I can't do it.
And there's walk over the map, pick up the little, then there's like little 3D renders of dinosaurs. I'm like, all right. Yep. It's like pick up the Triceratops. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm looking at it. It's like moving its legs and stuff. I'm like, put it down. I'm like, okay, two.
Oh,
and it grows to full size. And I just happen to be standing in the wrong spot because when I'm like and directly just kind of in its arse.
Oh,
like I'm directly in Triceratops' butt. I'm like, oh, just yeah, I'm just in it. Yeah,
grab your head out of it.
But like one of the greatest things that VR does is identify the scale of things.
Yeah,
and what's better than fucking dinosaurs,
because it's the childhood dream.
Yeah,
there's so many people,
and like one of them, there's like a Parasaurolophus, and it's like feed the dinosaur. I'm like, okay, hey dinosaur,
and it starts chomping away.
It's like, I'm like,
it's like the giraffe at the zoo.
Yeah,
sort of
I'm like, this is awesome.
Cool.
I spent some like, and then James woke up, so I had to bail. But tonight, when everyone's in bed, I'll jump back in VR.
Nice.
And I've also been spending a ton of time with Sea of Thieves, but that's an Xbox game. Apparently, we talk smack about Xbox and Microsoft. Your PC's like,
Yeah, because we crashed. We ran out of memory.
We ran out of storage. So it yelled at us. But anyway, yeah, I've been playing a ton of Sea of Thieves, but obviously, we don't really want to talk about that here. Fantastic game, by the way.
Go and check it out. It's doing cool things.
Sadly, it's not as deep as the ocean, but it's just as nice and fun.
Nicely put. Done. So we're getting into what, the news now?
Yeah, so let's head into the thing, the section we call Inform the Players, where we tell you about the PlayStation news you need to know about this week. Leveling pre-prepared by Josh.
Thank you, Matt.
Even in his absence, he's doing the right thing.
We're busy deleting shit.
However, I'm like, get that fucking story out of here. It's like, you know, him and his hard-on for CD Projekt Red. I'm like, that's cool.
They're pretty awesome, but there wasn't enough for it. I love The Witcher 3. Best game of the console generation. Mm. But not enough in it. Cool, they're hiring up.
It's luckily though, because he knows. I think he knows that you're a teacher. And he knows that I'm going to bring in a story that help that fits with you.
Yeah, he did well, actually.
This kicks off with...
There was some good in there.
So, Fortnite's transition to mobile is causing all sorts of problems in schools as kids sneak in a match of two during class. Bicker over victories and defeats and ruin the Wi-Fi for pretty much everyone else. Kotaku spoke to a high school AP computer science teacher, Nick Gershner, about the surge in kids neglecting their schoolwork in favor of playing the newest released mobile title. Quote, there has been a rise in the number of incidents where students walking into classes while playing the game. They started a match during lunch or before school and need to finish the 10 to 15 minute long matches. I've noticed in my room students sitting next to each other to play while pretending to do work. Students have been posting about the use of Fortnite in schools, including the fact that some schools have banned students from downloading Fortnite on their provided iPads. It's a weird sentence. What? Provided iPads?
Yeah, because there's a lot of the schools that, like, ones that are pretty well off, to be fair. But, like, here's your device. Like, this is yours. Wow. This is your iPad. Like, they're leased out.
Oh, okay.
So, you get it. The schools will get them back. But
nice. Or just outright banned the game on school Wi-Fi networks.
Look, it works. I think this whole thing is really simple. There's been a lot of arguments. I think, like, there was one that was circulating around about the Today Show, as in the Australian Today Show, about, oh, violent games, and they spoke about Fortnite being one of them. And the feedback that these shows always seem to get is, how about your parents just be parents? If you don't want your son or daughter to play these particular games, then remove it from their lives.
The real issue!
So when it comes to the classroom thing is, if you're a teacher, and I am, and I've had students that want to talk to me about Fortnite and have tried to bring... And that's fine. I'm happy to engage in a conversation about it. But have wanted to try and play it or walk in the door. They're playing it. Just take the device off them or just come down hard. Like, if you're a teacher, be a teacher. If you're a parent, be a parent.
Why do kids have phones in class anyway? I remember, like, we weren't even allowed to have fucking MP3 players. But back when they were cool.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, what's the rules on kids and phones?
Well, it'll look different from school to school with whatever school's policy is. But, like, there's these BYOD devices and, like, kids are getting their iPads or they're being allowed to bring in a device to use for whatever educational purpose because everyone's trying to push things. Like, we're in the 21st century. IT is a huge part of it. So, but it's the monitoring of that that's becoming harder and harder. And understandably, I mean, I'm sure, like, our IT teachers would have had a tough time back when we were at school, where you'd always try and surf around on the internet or play a game or whatever it was when you were in IT. Yeah,
there used to be a big network drive. People would install a bunch of games on.
Yeah. So I guess it's the same sort of thing going on. But if you're the teacher, be a teacher. Just snuff it out. It's not, and it's the same deal with the parent thing. It sucks. It's not fun. It's not easy either because you are having to keep an eye on virtually everything, especially when you want them to use a device for a particular reason. Oh, I'm a math teacher. For the most part, they're not... They don't need an iPad.
People used to put games on calculators, man.
Yeah, I played Doom on it. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And Drug Wars. That was sweet.
So, like, kids are kids, man. Like, this is news, but yeah, not look, news.
I got away with that sort of stuff myself. Yeah. But now, as the teacher, I'm going, well, I got away with it and probably dropped a few points into my various study scores as well. So I'm not going to let that happen to my lot. And, oh, what? You got your phone? Put it away. You don't need it.
Yeah, I used to play Pokemon in class, like on a Game Boy.
Yeah. We understand what the kids are trying to do, but yeah, it's just on the whoever the authority is in the room, whether it's the teacher or whether it's a parent at home or whatever it is, to just, if that's not what you want them to do, then follow through on it. And it is harder and harder for both parents and teachers to kind of, I mean, what discipline is looking very different these days to what it would have been when we were kids and, you know, how you want to deal with that. But just earn their respect and then they'll respect you when you say, no, I need this thing put away for whatever reason, whether it's you as a parent talking to a child or whether it's you as a teacher talking to the student. I think it's very much the same conversation.
Speaking of having a conversation and saying, no, we don't want you to do that, the long-running battle between Ubisoft and Vivendi has finally come to an end, with Vivendi agreeing to sell its entire stake in Ubisoft. The agreement stipulates Vivendi will sell all of its shares in Ubisoft, which amounts to 27.3% of Ubisoft share capital and about 30.49 million shares. Ubisoft will back all shares owned by Vivendi. Vivendi agrees to not acquire any shares in Ubisoft for the next 5 years. The Ontario Teachers Pension Plan and Chinese social media and game development giant Tencent.
Tencent.
Well, also, I think Tencent did
PUBG. Although they deal with PUBG in the Chinese region, so they're adapting it and releasing it out there. But then they've got their fingers in. They own Riot, so as in League of Legends.
Wow.
They own 40 or 48% of Epic.
Damn.
As in you know, Fortnite and Gears of War, well, formerly Gears of War, Unreal and all that, the engine inclusive. Yeah. And they also own, I can't think of the name of the studio now off the top of my head, but the mob who do Clash of Clans.
Shit.
So they've got three big ones, and now they're pulling in part of Ubisoft as well.
Yeah, because it says, yeah, so they will also enter as long-term investors in Ubisoft as part of the transaction. Tencent and Ubisoft have signed a strategic partnership agreement to expand Ubisoft's reach in China moving forward. According to Ubisoft, Tencent will operate, publish, and promote, quote, several of Ubisoft's most successful titles on PC and mobile in the Chinese market.
An important thing to note on top of that, so there was a lot of conversation immediately after this happened that, oh, well, Tencent's now just going to do what Vivendi was once doing. There is an agreement between Ubisoft and Tencent that they're not going to be doing that. So the 5% is the 5%. That's done. So we don't have to worry about that going on. Otherwise, I think this is a really good thing.
This is fantastic.
China is a booming market. Oh, sorry, China is a booming market at the moment. Ubisoft and just like every other video game developer or publisher is trying to get their games out in the region. So they've got someone who's probably more than any other publisher in the world has expert knowledge on that Chinese region, what people want, how they want it, and they've enlisted their help.
How to promote it and that sort of stuff, yeah.
And if it means they have to cough up 5% of their shares, like, which is ultimately not a big chunk when you think about it, the amount that Vivendi had and they were trying to perform a hostile takeover, I think it's fine. I think this is only good news for Ubisoft.
Following up on what we talked about Ubisoft 2 weeks ago, I think. So Ubisoft, we were talking about how Ubisoft have done this real, like, change of how they structure, how they do things, like stepping away from the annualization, like focusing in on
quality.
Games. So focus on quality over quantity. As a result, we got a better Assassin's Creed. We're seeing continuous support of Siege and like For Honor,
Watch Dogs 2, Watch Dogs 2, massive improvement. Those sort of
like
things.
All those things. So they were doing all the
Beyond
right
good
things
and evil
to prevent people from selling the shares to Vivendi, and it's they fought the good fight. And they've come out victors, and I'm so happy to see that.
So on top of all this, I think, and it was something I spoke about, my little show, The Insider, on the Player 2 channel, so please go check it out. But I spoke about how Ubisoft really got themselves into this situation. Like, their response when the whole Vivendi thing was going down was, we're going to double down on everything it is that we're doing, and we're just, like, it's just games, we're not going to worry about anything else, we're just going to really focus on doing what we do to the best of our ability. And I really hope that now that this threat is kind of past, I hope they don't lose that. Like, they've got some projects in the can already, obviously, like the likes of Beyond Good and Evil and hopefully a Splinter Cell, but you know, I just hope they don't forget what led to this. It was their hard work, it was them doubling down on what they do best, and all that work that's gone into it, they need to keep that up. And you know, time will tell.
I think they're in the right place. I think they've also opened another studio up this week as well.
Yeah, I think there was another two of them, wasn't there?
Yeah, so they're
getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, they're doing the right thing. They're sitting in the right places, and they're making things happen, which is really...
New markets, all that sort of jazz.
Yeah. Speaking of not so new markets, Modern Warfare 2.
Nice segue.
Last week, a listing was spotted for a Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 remaster, suggesting Activision may be announcing a remaster of the title sometime soon.
Not it's, Spyro.
It's, nope. That's what the fuck. Now, rumors are hinting that the game may be single player only. And this has also been backed up by Jason Schreier on Kinda Funny Games Daily. He also confirmed that he's heard the same. Charlie Intel and Eurogamer reports sources confirmed to both outlets that the title won't have a multiplayer mode. As Charlie Intel points out, the listing on Amazon Italy is priced at $25. And contrasted with the price of Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare's remaster of $40, it would make sense the game offers only a single player campaign at that price point.
I couldn't care less about Call of Duty.
No, me either.
But
I think... Like,
it does strike me as weird that there's no multiplayer.
In Modern Warfare 2, I remember there being like the one thing where you throw the knife, hits the guy in the face. You're in like friggin' generic stand.
I remember No Russian.
Yeah, No Russian, obviously a big one.
Because that was like really controversial as well. Ignoring the game and...
Hence why it appeared in Trump's thing. I think it appeared...
He was the one that leaked it. It was actually the remastered footage in that video.
Ah, smart. It was all a ploy.
Yeah.
It's Activision and Trump working
Cross
together.
Cross-promotion, yeah.
Yeah, very smart.
Like Trump and Facebook.
I don't think I made the joke on the show, but like I think the real reason that Trump didn't like the No Russian scene is because at the end you get double crossed by the Russian guy. That's why he didn't like it. Yeah, he's like, he had no problem with the mass violence.
Yeah,
it was the twist at the end. He's like, oh fuck this,
Putin got me again.
Yeah, so look, this is a discussion that's been going on for years and years and years about Call of Duty, about how
why
don't That's a big one. That's how, but like in smaller circles, they're saying, why not split them up? Like, you know, create
the single player
and the campaign. Like, I myself,
because there is an audience that's only going for multiplayer.
Like, there's statistics behind it that a large percentage of the people that buy Call of Duty never touch the campaign.
Yeah. And look, I'd be one of those if I was going to play, and I did pick up World War II and just never got around to it.
Yeah.
But I was going for the campaign.
Yeah, that's what
campaign
I played for.
Only.
Yeah.
But there is, probably 90, maybe even 95% of the audience that's going for the multiplayer, and they might mess around with the campaign, but ultimately they're there for the multiplayer experience. And I think there's maybe this is them testing the waters.
Yeah, I think there's something to this though. Like, it's a difficult. It's kind of this weird. Investing money without investing money, because like
it doesn't cost them anything.
Yeah, it doesn't cost them anything. But it's Modern Warfare. People love Modern Warfare, but people love the. I remember very fondly the multiplayer of Modern Warfare 2. The story, not so much. But for $25, even with exchange rate, $35-40 maybe, I'd consider it.
You know what you could do with that money?
Anything else?
Spyro, do it! Come on.
So. I'm cool to see how this goes.
I'll be interested. It will say a lot about the future of Call of Duty with what happens with this release.
There are a lot of people that want to play the campaign, but they don't want to pay the full $100.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
You know what I mean?
Even regardless of my opinion of the franchise, like, it's an old game. I've been there, done it. It's an extra coat of paint, really.
Well, even a new game, even the one that's coming, even Black Ops 4 is an example, coming out later this year. If they're like, hey, you can buy the campaign or the multiplayer, I'm like, I'm going to buy that campaign. I ain't playing the multiplayer. Because, like, I'm old. My skills aren't as what they were.
So how would you price those things if you were to look? Think about our $100 Call of Duty, forget collector's editions, any of that sort of rubbish.
Well, clearly what they're doing here
what would be the breakdown? Would you go 70-30? $30 if you want to buy the campaign, $70 for the multiplayer experience?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Or 50-50? Like, well,
they're doing here, they're marketing at $25. And, with a retail game in the US being $60, it is pretty much down the middle.
Yeah.
So I'd say, $40-45 Australian would be...
But, I mean, this is different because it is a... Remaster of an older game. So if it was a brand new thing, they're going to mark that price higher straight at the gate.
Being a brand new, I'd say it's probably half-half.
Yeah.
Only because they don't want to burn the multiplayer players and they don't want to really burn the campaign.
Yeah, and it
players.
Also, there's a perception thing that, giving it less... Like, it's costing less than the multiplayer. You're trying to tell me this is a lesser Call of Duty experience?
Spot on.
Optics, we need to shake up these perceptions and stuff that, like, there is this big thing out there and it's not just a Call of Duty thing that, like, the price represents value. Like, I got this many hours of the game and it cost me $100. Why the hell did you do that? Versus this game that, I don't know, Witcher 3 costs the same amount, but I put 200 hours into it. That means Witcher 3 is better. No.
Yeah.
You're getting totally different sorts of experiences.
The money to time ratio thing is people are dumb.
That's an old thing, but it needs to go.
Sony.
Like Call of Duty.
Sony took the top spot in console sales again for February 2018, and Monster Hunter World was the best-selling game for the month.
Loving it.
Very cool.
Need to get back to it, but loving it.
Overall spending on hardware, software, and accessories is up 23% over last February. I believe this is mostly in the US, attributing largely to the hardware, but also in the, quote, accessories and game card category of spending, which includes controllers. The PS4 Black DualShock is by far the best-selling accessory of 2018 so far.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
It makes sense. The DualShock. You
need a controller.
Yeah, a lot of them have been given out by now.
Still, it's a bit weird. Like, how many couch co-op experience do we have? A Way Out, which you'll see...
Which we would have seen 2 days ago. Far Cry 5, full player co-op.
Yeah.
Digital ads across games.
And Borderlands, when the time eventually comes. But there's not many of these things, so who's buying
additional
controllers?
I think they're buying them, because their first controllers gave out. Like, PS4 came out 2013. It's been, 5 years? Batteries are shot. Grips are shot.
Well, the battery was never much.
Batteries always go... Yeah. We'll get to that later. There's actually a question for that.
Oh, cool.
Like, imagine the controller's given out at this point. They're like, I want a new one.
It could be that, I suppose. I certainly remember with my launch PS4 controller, the stick. And Sony acknowledged there was a problem, but the rubber on the sticks kind of...
Deteriorated,
and you were just catching yourself with metal. Now I got little rubber covers for them.
Josh swears by them. He has them, he loves them.
There's some people who just use them regardless. Mm. Was Josh one of those where he just used them regardless?
He just bought it, and he's like, this is the best thing ever.
And they are pretty cool. But not my thing, but... Like, it added to the life of that controller. It still gets used now on my dodgy PS4 that's off in the other room, my launch PS4.
Look, you with your fancy two PS4s.
I've got a wife that likes playing games too. I leave The Sims and those sorts of things on there for her. She loves them, and I play my Monster Hunters on the Pro.
Very nice. You know what game that's going to look really good on the Pro? God of War.
About a month ahead of its
20th of April release date, God of War has officially gone gold.
Whatever that means.
Meaning development of the game itself is now complete. There you go. The game's director, Corey Balrog, not Balrog, I keep saying that every time, took to the PlayStation blog to say a few words. He shall not pass. About his time working on the PS4 exclusive. This was the scariest, most wonderful thing I have ever done, and I can honestly say it would never have been possible without the full-throated support of Sony and the tireless work of the incredible team at Santa Monica Studio. We have been through a lot together, and I would not change a thing. You are the best damn team a director could ever hope for, and I am thankful beyond words.
He's not a crier.
Every ounce of passion and pride you put into this game. He clearly is very proud of what he and Sony Santa Monica have created and has an emotional attachment to the game, stories, and theme. Makes sense. And in an interview he talked about, he channeled a lot of himself into it. He also adds, because of this story is about fathers and sons, I want to thank my father, James Balrog, a source of inspiration and a great writer. Oh, fuck, that actually really, really hard the chest.
Okay, maybe he did actually get a little bit choked
who
up in this one.
Yeah, who instilled me within the drive to create and the fortitude to survive the difficulties that come with that vocation. I want to get to that last bit in a minute. But like, God of War's gold. That's good. Like, it's good. Like,
I think it's fantastic. We know the things now. It's off. It's coming. For us as media folks, where we get this, like, about the excitement gets a little bit more real. Like cool. Oh, hang on. How soon? Come on, Sony.
When's this code?
The emails start going out. But the gold doesn't mean as much anymore, because we know, like, at this point, and it's the way most games are working these days, the game goes gold. That's the one that they stamp to disc. But then the team just continues working. And they're already, okay, now we're buffing up these, like, patches, bugs.
It's the same thing as CERT, like, so that they meet the minimum requirements for the game to be certified in the US, and then they just buffer the rest with patches and stuff. Which makes sense.
Which is where your day one patch comes from.
Where previously, from the day of CERT or going gold to release is a month, it's 2 months, it's, you know, it's a bunch of dead time. So, like, they use that time to fix a bunch of shit, add some more stuff, so when day one does roll around, it's bigger, it's better. Now, granted, a lot of that stuff's not on disc. People always have an issue with day one patches, but I think day one patches are fine.
Yeah, I think they're fine. Look, it is the whole thing about the state of the internet around the world than a problem with the gaming industry more than anything else. But look, I'm excited.
Dude, I'm keen as shit. Like, look behind you. You've got old man Kratos there, got big time Kratos over there.
Is there more?
No, that's what I think. But I do have the
Collector's Edition
pre-ordered, the big fuck off one.
Yes, we've got that.
Cool. Yeah. But yeah, there'll be an unboxing. Like, I am stupidly keen for this game. And cool. Like, adding to that, as he mentions, about a story about father and sons, like, since I've become a father, like, my how I process things, how I look at things has changed, you know, and having this story being such a compelling story between a father and son, like, granted, side note, internet, anytime anyone goes, we finally get to see what Kratos has been like as a parent, get the fuck out of here. Kratos was a parent since the first one. He killed his children, as per, you know, he's been a family man before. It's horrible, like, and that's what caused the chain of events. Everyone's like, we've finally got to see him
this is more about the change in Kratos, and then how does that affect him as a parent.
Yes. So, like, I'll get really antsy whenever I see an article or a video, someone being like,
yeah, he's been there, done that.
This isn't new, it's a new way of looking at it. And I'm really keen to see it, you know, as being a father myself, super, super keen. Now, you not being a father.
One day,
maybe, who knows. But, like, imagine, even if you come back to it in a couple of years' time and you look at it and you'll be like, shit. Because it does. It changes your perspective.
You've spoken to me about that kind of off camera, I think.
I'll talk about my kid all the time.
No, but like how that's kind of affected you when it comes to consuming media of any sort, be it a game or a movie or whatever it happens to be. Like, it's a mindset shift. And I mean, yeah, I haven't been there, done that yet, but it's something I
not for lack of trying, eh?
But what I mean, slightly deviating from that, you're talking about like the more or less the blood, sweat, and tears that he's put in. There was a great photo I saw this morning, like it was a before and after shot of Corey from the beginning of the project to after. Man, that guy's aged. So shocking. Like, they just dig the hole and throw him in. He's ready to go off the back of that. Like, he's going to enjoy months and months just to put his feet up.
A little sabbatical.
And he probably deserves it, really.
We
spoke about it when we were watching the PSX stream. Like, he was getting harassed from moment one. Mm. When's this thing coming out? When's it coming out? When's it coming out?
Yeah.
From the head of PlayStation.
If I saw him in person, I'd be harassing the shit out of him too.
Yeah.
And he's like, who are you? I'm like, this is not important. Where's the game coming out?
Just tell me. You're making the game. I know about you. You don't have to know about me.
Yeah. No, I'm keen as shit. I'm going to dive into that hard. But finish off the news with, as we always do, with the top selling games. Week ending the 18th of March. Number 10, Shadow of the Colossus. Number 9, thanks for doing that for me, appreciate it. Number 9, Crash Insane Trilogy. Number 8, Rainbow Six Siege. Number 7, Call of Duty World War 2. Number 6, Monster Hunter World. Number 5, Horizon Zero Dawn. Number 4, Destiny 2, out of nowhere. Number 3, Uncharted Lost Legacy, must still be on sale. GT Sport. And number 1.
I'm not going to do it.
I'm like, motherfucker. At number 1, Burnout Paradise Remastered.
All right, that's an interesting one.
That is really cool.
That's an old-ass game.
It is an old-ass game. I remember buying that way back in the day on the PS3. But like, it still kind of supports my theory that like only like 400 games get sold a week in Australia.
And also, can we just stop doing Need for Speed and do more Burnouts? Clearly, numbers suggest that
Criterion,
people want
them. A part of the Need for Speed, like they helped to make the last one.
Yeah, but they also helped to work on Battlefront 2. Like they kind of dabble in everything. They're meant to have that, I don't know, GoPro the game sort of thing, which has just disappeared. I don't know. The charts look pretty good. I won't lie, I was too busy focusing on making sure I counted right to keep track of everything you said there. But look, bodes well. Sales are still good.
Yeah.
I do agree with your point. The ones at probably the bottom have sold 15 copies for the week, but 15 people who get
I need to reach out to the IGEA. I need to know those numbers. I need to know how many copies get sold a week. Just my own pure interests.
And then, what is there anything coming next? Oh, Far Cry will be the top of that next week.
Yeah,
Far Cry. Or the week after, I suppose.
Monster that, yeah. We'll see a way out in there, I think. We'll do it on all right. But anyways, we're done with the news. Let's move into the main topic of conversation, where we talk to the players. Now, with God of War going gold, and we've also seen like Shadow of the Colossus finally come out, we're going to see, you know, a bunch of other big titles coming out. Let's see, we want to see Spider-Man sort of stuff. Detroit coming out in May. Like, what Sony has previously had at E3 is all coming to fruition. We're seeing it all. So, as some sort of E3 hype, because now we're starting to see a lot of E3 stuff happen. Nintendo's booked their website. Bethesda have rocked up their time. Things are ramping up.
Microsoft decided they're not going. They're just going to go across the road.
Yeah, Microsoft have left the building. They're like, we're going to do something else over here. So my big sort of question, and it was sort of inspired by an article I saw on the internet earlier. Does PlayStation have room to surprise us this year when it comes to E3?
So when we discussed this beforehand, I just flat out, nope. I guess maybe that now that I've actually thought about it a little bit, I'll rein that back in a little bit. I think it'll be what they do with the third parties. Because what we know in terms of the first party sense, like, basically every first party studio is covered. In terms of the games that are coming out, the ones you just mentioned, and then you've got The Last of Us, so that's Naughty Dog. You've got Sucker Punch with Ghost of Tsushima. You've got, do we count Kojima? I guess it's an exclusive, so let's bundle that in there for the sake of it. Like, there's those three on the horizon. We know Guerrilla's not going to be doing Horizon for a little while, not because it's just that it's a big project, so it's going to take some time. And then everything else is coming out this year. So and there's Days Gone next year as well. I just don't think there's much left in their first parties to do it. So unless anyone split off into two studios somewhere along the way, but I figured that would be documented somewhere at this point. That's the sort of thing Schreier picks up and runs with. Then I don't see much from the first party. So I think it's down to what partnerships can they tee up with third parties. And this may be where your Final Fantasy VII remakes and games of that ilk kind of come into play. They drop, you know, the surprise would be, shit, Final Fantasy's coming in this year. Not going to happen. But, you know, like those sorts of things, that's like this out of the box. Shenmue, maybe.
Yeah.
For example, that's probably a greater chance of it actually happening. Those are the sort of things I think that are going to knock people's socks off because I just don't see much with the first parties.
I certainly agree. But I think, will they surprise us? Yes, because they have to.
Yeah.
Like, they have no choice.
That's what E3 is.
Like, they've backed themselves into a corner in some way. So, looking at the last 3 years' worth of conferences, right? Like, every year we've seen God of War, Detroit, Last of Us, Death Stranding. Like, we've seen all the big hitters. You know what I mean? And, like, we're getting to a point now where they can't run it again. Like, Days Gone, this will be the third year it appears. and then it's, and hopefully it has to come out in like early next year.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, as in, yes, they've hit all their big first party studios, but as with most studios, what they'll do is the whole team's working on it up until a point.
Yeah,
and then they cut the team not in half, or they, you know, sub them off, and
yeah, and they start pre-production.
Yeah, you're working on a new project while these guys finish it off. So I think we'll see a lot of pre-production stuff, maybe in the same vein of like, maybe not last year, the year before, they're like, these are things that are coming. When they're coming, not going to tell you.
Yeah,
we can't tell you, but they're coming. So I think we'll see Dreams. Dreams will get a release date.
Oh, sorry, I did forget about Dreams.
Yeah. I think third party is probably the right vein as well. I think we'll see some Red Dead stuff there. I'd say we'll see Kingdom Hearts there.
That'd be huge if Rockstar rocks up.
Well, we know they have a marketing deal.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll go in, I don't think they'll spill anything.
Well, we did see
anything.
Like GTA 5 when it came across to PS4 and Xbox One, they rocked up. Well, they didn't rock up.
The trailer did, yeah.
Yeah, they showed
I think we'll see a trailer or something like that. So in terms of room to surprise, yeah, they kind of don't really have a choice. They've got a lot to do, a lot of ground to make, because they've essentially, yeah, they've showed up with a box of cool shit, and that cool shit stayed there, and that box is suddenly a whole lot empty.
Yeah. Are there any... like, I guess we're maybe jumping too soon into spitballing things we want.
No,
is there anything that you'd love to see? Just like that surprise. What would be that surprise that you'd have? And also, we've got a medieval
remakes
thing.
I think that'll
get so that'll get something shown
as well.
Sorry, you think that's this year?
I think it's this year.
Or I reckon 2019.
Oh really? Well, it's nothing. It'll be this year.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I'll agree
I would
with
like
that.
To think it would come out this year. That'd be a fucking impressive turnaround. Like, think about Crash Bandicoot was in production for how long and no one knew.
This is a remake.
Yes,
remake?
Same way Crash Bandicoot was.
Oh yeah, I suppose
they did three games in that 2 years.
But they're
cycle.
Too busy working on Spyro. Come on.
Do you reckon Vicarious?
You gotta believe.
I reckon we'll see what Blue Point are working on. I think they'll come out with some sort of...
Yeah, that could be...
Look, although they're not exclusive to PlayStation at this point, they're doing a lot of PlayStation properties. In terms of what they'll do, I'm not too sure. My little man's having a sook out there.
Here we go.
So I think that would be interesting to see where they come from that side. What are they going to do? Unsure.
Time is, by the way. All right, cool. Well...
So I'm curious to see that side of things and where they jump...
Yeah, I follow you.
Yeah, Blue Point. I think we'll see. You know, maybe Rocksteady. They're all PlayStation exclusive. They've done some cool shit with Sony. You know,
maybe it's not necessarily exclusive, but it's just here. Yeah. This is where we're showing it for the first time.
They've been quiet for quite a number of years. You know, same goes for if we want to go down that Batman ilk, WB Montreal. They've been kind of quiet for a while.
Yep.
You know, Sony right now in the place that it is with its 80 million consoles out there in the market, all third parties will want to go to there. It'd be very difficult to get one that's out. You know, that's
yeah,
not.
For sure. Given that the Xbox One X hasn't really. I mean, it's a great console, but it hasn't tipped. I was worried about the battery dying again because of course, we spoke about Xbox, so something was going to happen.
Shit that's cut down.
So, I mean, look, the Xbox One X is great, but it's not seemed to have tipped the needle any way or the other when it comes to console sales or exclusives. I'd love to see Sony come out and go, don't expect it anytime soon. Here's Resistance 4. I love Resistance. that's a big man crush for that franchise.
Yeah.
Couldn't be done by Insomniac. They're busy with Spider-Man and working, and probably another Ratchet and Clank. Maybe there's that remake
of course.
The second one. I don't know, or just a new game, whatever. I'd love to see Resistance. God, that just I'd make sure I have a camera on me for PlayStation just in case something like that happens.
It's like funny because I think about all this. My brain does sort of go towards remasters at the moment and sort of re-releases because I'm trying to think of what else I want to see. Like, obviously, Ghost of Tsushima will be there, no questions asked. I kind of hope we don't see The Last of Us again because we've seen so much of it. It will be there. I don't want it to be, though. Like, I think we've seen too much.
I think we'll get our gameplay demo.
Yeah, I think we'll have to. That's the only thing they can show at this point, right? There'll be more some Death Stranding stuff, but even then, like, these games are so far away. But, like, yeah, because I'm the same, I'm stretching my brain. I'm like, the only thing I can think of, like, you know, Sony London, are they still around?
Yeah, but they're working on some of those VR projects. So they're working on that Blood and Truth.
Yeah,
so VR, which looks awesome.
Yeah.
That'll be the sort of thing come out. Here you go, release date, done. But it's not your big hitter, the one that's going to knock people over. We know about it, and we know what we're expecting from it.
So what if, instead of a software vein, they jump into a hardware vein. Now, I'm not thinking PS5.
Like, there's the tagline for your episode.
Yeah. I'm thinking PS5. I'm thinking new VR. A remodeled version of the headset. 2 years on, coming out later that year. They've
kind of done it already once.
No, they very... like it's
it was only very subtle.
1.2, pretty much. They're like... Because if they are looking it down some PS5 shit, right?
Yep.
And PS5, in theory, could be coming out in the next year to 2 years, right? They're like, okay, well, that's revamp the headset properly. Not this half jump, because we forgot that HDR is going to become a thing. So, I mean, they're like, well, that's preempted, let's plan this. It's looking ahead. I think more people will be more open. People are really open to buying a PS5, obviously.
Yeah, people are.
But
My only concern with like the VR one is that if they were to remodel it and presumably almost Xbox One exit where it's got a bit more grunt or whatever, that's still going to be made to work on the PS4 and it's not going to necessarily then transition over well.
But that's where they go. This is the new model PSVR, works with your PS4, but it's ready for the PS5. And that's
So they have to announce PS5 at the same time.
They announced.
Or they just Vita it where it works on PS4 when it comes along.
They announced existence.
And the whole explode. Yeah, okay.
Well, then even if they just show a logo for PS5, like it's a different font, and they're like, hey, and it's going to work with the PS5. And everyone's like, Rob!
Like, we're not announcing this. This is a while off, but this is the thing. It works for your PS4. It's going to be forward compatible?
Yeah.
Like compatible?
The plans are there. Like, whatever. We'll use the power of the PS5.
Possibly. It'd be interesting. It'd be really like that. That'd knock the socks off people. But I personally think most of it's going to be around software, and it's just
how do
they make it happen?
They've been winning with games at this point. So like, I think if they do something with PS5, it's very likely it'll be like a small announcement, but like separate to E3, separate to Gamescom, like kind of like they did
the PlayStation conference.
The conference they had
in February, of 2013.
Which means if they're going to announce anything for next year, they'd have it by now. But
You would have thought so.
Yeah.
I'm okay with waiting for a PS5.
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. My wife would not let me buy a PS5 right now.
Life.
Yeah, life gets expensive. But yeah, I think announcing it. I think that's pretty much their big ace in the hand, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it'd be huge. Like, yeah, they could drop it whenever. They could get some jump on Xbox. Like, it does all sorts of good for them.
Because they'll do is because they're going to have an advantage of time. Because Xbox are in a place where they can't rework a console now. The One X is less than
they've set the tone.
Yeah, One X is a year old. Will be a year old at that point, not even. And then they can't be like, in 2019, here's the new generation of Xbox. Like, I just bought one.
Yeah, and they actually did a fantastic job when it came to the Xbox One X originally, where Phil Spencer had said, and it was actually at the EB Expo 2 years ago, whatever he goes. Maybe we were foolish for announcing the S and the X at the same time, but we want to be transparent with you.
Mm.
And I think, like, that he'd be being nice and transparent, but to an extent.
Yeah, like, you're shooting yourself in the foot in a little weird way. Like
you'd almost have to have said when the Xbox One X came out, yeah, but just be aware, 2 years from now.
But by them saying that the Xbox One X, this is an old discussion, but by them saying that Xbox One X is part of this generation, it's locked them in.
Yeah.
So Sony can come out and be like, this is a truly next generation console and it will be the actual most powerful console ever made. And they'll have that monocle, they'll have that title for a good couple of years.
Yep. Yeah, it's a really interesting space that we're in, and E3 will be really
interesting. Because a lot of the time...
Because we can probably predict what Microsoft's going to do. It's going to be games, because they're loading up for that. Phil Spencer's been chasing down people to become first parties or do exclusives for them. So they're targeting the games. And I doubt that that's going to be built around a new console.
Yeah.
That's we need to top up because we're getting smashed in this space.
And Xbox, like, when Phil Spencer did come in, we took over a couple of years ago, like, he did shake shit up.
Yeah. He's done an awesome job.
Like, he shakes shit up in the way of, like, he's restructured a bunch of stuff in terms of first parties as well. So that's what, and I think we're now at that cycle, you know, it's been 3-4 years. Games should be coming out now from this little shake-up.
We're due.
Yeah.
This year's probably that year.
Yeah, I think we'll see a lot of first parties there, but I think Sony will still do that power. Like, whether it'll be a hardware or software, I'm probably still going to enjoy it because I'm biased as fuck. But I'm scared, concerned, and excited all at the same time.
I'm more curious than anything else. That's the big thing. I guess that was the whole idea of this topic anyway, but... There's a bunch of different paths they could go, like really defined paths they could go down, and it's, and I feel like third party is the one. Like they kicked the generation off with a lot of their support, and I think they're going to need to close it out with that support with a couple of those tent pole first parties along the way, which is where The Last of Us drops in. Where Ghost of Tsushima does it, not Death Stranding, because that's a PS5 game.
See, that's where I'm going. That's where I'm going with you, right?
So those console straddling, like those generation straddling
cross,
games,
the red little cross line, because
Assassin's Creed Black Flag.
Even just the people's expectations, right? Like, we are heading towards the end of the channel. People know we're heading to the end of the console generation, but expectations is going to be a huge thing, because think 2 years ago when we first saw God of War, when we first saw all these games, and then the next year, still a great conference,
but it was the same games.
But everyone's like, "Oh man, in the last 3 years, people's satisfaction with the conference has decreased, not because they weren't fantastic consoles.
The bar was
conference I should say, because the expectations were high because the bar was high.
Yeah. And you can't keep matching it.
Yeah, and if they come out with this year with nothing but third parties, or very minimal first parties and mostly third parties, people are going to crack their shits.
Yeah, it depends on what you do with those third parties are. Because if you think about the first of the, and I've heard it referred to as the Year of Dreams, that first one where Final Fantasy VII Remake was announced, where Shenmue, like these were all third parties that made...
Yeah,
Crash was in that one as well, but that's third party, I guess, as well. Mm. It was third parties that did the job for them. And then that created the foundation, the hype for the PS4, and then the first parties delivered afterwards. So I don't see why you can't get a similar sort of thing going here, where we just dot these third-party things, and there's maybe exclusive content for them or whatever, or maybe they are console exclusive but from third parties, for the PS4, and then you're ready to hit the ground running when it comes to next gen. And there's also that Shadows Die Twice.
FromSoft.
We don't know whether that's exclusive or not, but like it's...
I didn't even think about
it. It's a game from them.
Now, Bloodborne 2, that's a headline right there.
There's our title.
Yeah, clickbait Bloodborne 2 at E3 2018?
Done.
The question mark instantly makes it okay.
Yeah,
it is. It's a question. It's not clickbait, it's a question. It's how clickbait works. Moving on, we'll quickly jump into some of the questions that we have received. Where'd the thing go? There it is. Jack Cruz asks,
love you, mate.
What's your favorite co-op game you've played?
Borderlands 2.
Yeah, Borderlands is pretty dope.
Borderlands is just an incredible experience. Nothing I enjoyed more than kind of stealing all the loot from Jay of patched Player 2 fame. But even outside of the trolling stuff, working together, learning these deep systems and getting to play it with someone else, just awesome. And then, who knows, maybe a game that we're playing tonight might... We'll see how our way out goes.
My answer's odd and weird. It's Rock Band.
Yeah, that makes sense, though.
I love Rock Band. Like, the amount of times...
It's
like
a collaborative experience.
Right, awesome. In its sort of its peak, and even now, and it's kind of... It's like weird trough, is like the sense of everyone coming together, having a few beers, playing some tunes, having a great time.
Getting worse and worse as you have more beer.
It's fantastic. Like,
I love that sort of experience. Yeah.
Not co-op in the same way, let's do this goal together, like a Borderlands.
Yep.
Or... It's a different experience.
No, but I follow you. No, it's more about the fun rather than progression.
But yes, thank you very much, Jack Cruz of Cruzy _ mate on Twitch. He's a good dude. He's got a good show.
Really good
it is what it is at 8bit.net. Makes some really good shit.
And we've got a monster question coming up now.
Yeah. Our buddy Joel from Anagame asked this very long question. After scurrying around the house last night looking for a charged DualShock, it left me thinking, in the time that we live in where consoles are iterated on mid-generation, why don't we really ever see drastic improvements to the controllers? Surely having a DualShock 4 that lasts longer than 5 hours is realistically achievable, right? And while they're working on that, could they also do overall tweaks to button response time, further minimizing dead zone, completely new function buttons, or comfort features, etc. to justify releasing a new model? Thoughts? And then an asterisk. Yes, I know about the second model, DualShock 3, but that was released to fix the 6-axis and the DualShock 4 slightly changed up the light bar, and I'm not counting those as big enough change-ups.
I'm all for improvements to battery life.
Mm-hmm.
Something like the DualShock 4 would really benefit from that. In terms of response times, I don't think you can really afford to do it if you're the console manufacturer, unless you can guarantee that every single owner of a PS4 is going to do it, because that creates a disconnect. in the all-important online gaming space, where one person has a leg up because they're like that response time is just that split second better, and that creates a disconnect between your competitors, and it just doesn't work as a result. So,
excuse me.
Yeah, battery life, those sort of things, it just improves the user's experience, like the more basic aspect of the experience, that I can play longer, that sort of thing, fine. But anything that's going to potentially give you a competitive edge over someone else, if you're into competitive sort of games, it's just a big no-no as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not someone who's into competitive gaming. So...
Sorry, I've got this thing stuck in my throat.
It's an interesting, like, it's a really interesting one to kind of dissect, but... And it works, but to an extent.
Short answer, it's super easy. Make an Elite controller. In the same vein, the Xbox Elite controller, make a PlayStation 1. That'll help those people that want that sort of high-end, better controller. Like, right now, they do exist, like Mad Cats, I think, and like the Razer...
Mad Cats have done
stuff. And like, yeah, there's like the Razer with Razer Nagu, whatever.
Yep.
Like, there are... excuse me. There are higher ones out there, but they're like licensed first part, like licensed console. Like if they can come out and go, this is the definitive control that we've made.
Yeah, look, I think that's cool. That still
that's
works.
That's the best way around
And to my point before, like doesn't give you a competitive edge.
Yeah.
I guess
it doesn't.
Can button map these things, but it's not improving your response time or anything like that. That is the same.
Yeah.
It's just how you tweak your controls.
Yeah, and like battery technology is bigger and better now than was 5 years ago.
It should have been better when the PS4 first came out anyway. That was one of the main...
Hey, at least we don't have to use AA batteries, Xbox. Okay, the camera's still going where we're at. But no, it's a good question. That could be maybe be another announcement out of E3 this year. Like, hey, we've done this. But I think that'd be something they'd be waiting.
Far too late, I think.
Far too late.
Yeah. But it's a good thing to explore going into next gen. You know, look at the feedback you're getting about your controls and maybe, the battery life's no good or this. And those things that aren't going to give people that edge, fix them.
But you also got to remember,
you can opt in at that point.
Exactly. You got to remember, but three of the opt-in, like, that's the biggest thing, right? Because the consoles come with a controller.
Yeah.
And their money. That's part of that cost of when you buy a console is that controller. So they need to obviously save some money where they can to keep you within the US $400-$450, right? So if they start pumping in fancy shit into the controller, there goes that price.
Yeah, of course.
I'd much rather have better innards in the console than the controller.
Yep.
You know why? Because you like playing games on that console.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Speaking of games, this is what's coming out this week.
Lots
in
of
a section we called Coming to the Players. Of course, thank you very much to Jack and Joel for the questions this week. This is all games releasing week of March 27th, 2018. Atari Flashback Classics, Volume 3, PS4 Digital. Eight Liar Lady and Soul, The Alchemist and the Mysterious Paintings, PS4 Digital and Retail. What the fuck?
Atelier at the beginning there.
Sure. Bit Dragon Plus, PS4 and Vita. Bridge Constructor Stunts, PS4, Digital. Code Realize Bouquet of Rainbows, PS4 Digital and Retail. Code Realize Future Blessings, PS4 Vita.
This is the Pokemon game that's coming to, right? Yeah,
the big hitter, Far Cry 5, PS4 Digital and Retail. Hope County's Montana has been overrun by a fanatical Doomsday cult, the project of at Eden's Gate. On your arrival, you must spark the fires of resistance to liberate the community.
Go check out some footage on your channel.
Yeah,
on Friday.
My plan is to stream the whole damn thing. So twitch.tv/popculturists. And the literal hitter, MLB The Show 18. keen as fuck for MLB The Show.
Yeah, you're a bit of a fan of your MLB,
I love the baseball game so much. I'm replaying 17 now just to get myself back in the wheelhouse.
Just getting the swing of it.
Yeah.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Solid pitch. MX versus ATV All Out, PS4 Digital Retail. Preta, Vendetta Rising, PSVR. Reverie.
I'm conducting an interview with those guys right now. Hopefully you'll be seeing it on the website by that point. I've been real slack.
On PS Vita. Nice.
It was Vita first. Yeah. So this is very Earthbound-like, but without the same kind of turn-based combat. Has that Earthbound aesthetic. You're looking at it now on the iPad there. Developed Vita first. These were guys that just like they met one another part of their course. Fell in love, like, well, got working together, joint over their
they
love
fell
of Vita.
In love with each other.
Yes, and then created a team.
The interview will confirm that.
It will confirm that. Got together based on their love of the Vita, started developing it for that. The publisher they were working with said, no, we need to get it to PS4 as well because sales. No one owns a Vita or whatever anymore, or wants to play on Vita. And Reverie's coming out this week, so that's awesome.
So save an island in peril on a childhood holiday with restless spirits threatening the safety of Taromi Island's inhabitants. Tai must venture through dangerous dungeons and across a variety of environments to put the spirits to rest. My brain's thinking about the fucking stunts game. All in a summer holiday.
They're also based in New Zealand, and there's heaps of New Zealand touchstones in that whole thing. Fuck so yeah. Kind of cool.
Roller Coaster Tycoon Joyride, PS4 Digital. Tempest 4000, PS4 Digital. The Witch and the Hundred Knight 2, PS4 Digital. That's it.
Lots of games.
Obviously big hitters, as I said, pun aside, Far Cry, MLB. Which is good for me. I'm going to play both those
games. They're right up your alley.
Bad news for me, they come out on the same day.
And I'll just try and catch up on some of those games that have been stockpiling with all these ones I've been reviewing.
Now by this time it goes up, you've finished Far Cry.
Far Cry's
it's
done.
It's old news, man. You're done.
Away Out, hopefully we're done tonight. What's the other one? Ni No Kuni, done. I can just focus on Thieves.
Woo!
Crash, boom, done.
That was good. That was good.
What happens if we talk about Nintendo? What happens to our stream? Like,
The audio just cuts out.
Yeah, okay.
we get hit with copyright strikes.
Oh.
Anyway, that brings us to the end of the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Paul, where they can find you, if they enjoyed the
hopefully
voice.
You've already heard this spiel before from very some likely. Of the previous episodes I've been on, but player2.net.au is the website. That's where we have reviews, previews, opinion pieces, news, features. We have this cool thing, basically video game fantasy draft, like kind of fantasy
I
sports.
I love that idea.
It's really cool. I need to do a new piece in that to kind of update the scores, but you'll see more of that in the future. The YouTube channel, youtube.com/player2netau. We've got Patched, the Video Games Club, The Insider, Player 2 Play, so our Let's Play series, a new series we've got going called The Late Game Review, contributed by an old mate of mine who's just joined the fold in the last few weeks from school, and trailers and a whole bunch of other stuff as well, and our Patreon, patreon.com/player2au. Just like you guys, we're trying to raise a little bit of money to help further what we're doing, improve what we're doing, kind of get some new resources and offset the running costs, I guess, of keeping a website / YouTube channel going. So far, things are going pretty well there. Looking for any and all support to help us kind of achieve those little dreams and goals, much like you guys. Yeah. It's going well. So thank you for any support there.
No worries. But if you enjoy that conversation, don't forget this airs every Monday morning at 9 a.m. on YouTube and 8 a.m. on all of the podcast services. You can join the conversation at facebook.com/group/thepopculture. That's a nice little community group there. Other good socials time. Are in the description, including Discord and Instagram, which I'm trying to be more active on. But as I said, if you want to support us financially, you can always head to patreon.com/thepopculturist. Throw us through bucks. There might be a tier there that interests yourself. And of course, merch, popculturist.com/shop. All a bunch of good goodies there. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
For
once
replacing
again.
Josh.
You're a lot less beard. He can't be replaced.
Well, to you maybe.
Well, we didn't we didn't talk about The Witcher in the end and all that. Like, where are you going to get that otherwise?
It doesn't exist anymore. Like, The Witcher part's gone. He's here. He's out. It's his show, but like, I'm just here. He's out. I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Paul James.
And that was For The Players.